I am always looking for old linoleum. So
Okay.
if your listeners, reader, you know, readers, viewers, know of any
Deal.
old linoleum, real linoleum is 1900 to 1950, cork tar, linseed oil underneath. It's never glued down. It just rolls right up. Anywhere around America, I'll ship it. I'll come get it. Whatever.
And we are back. What's this? Back-to-back weeks, back-to-back episodes of the Folk Artwork and Friends podcast. Thank you, everybody, for joining me here today. I've had a busy start to summer. I've enjoyed it thoroughly and very excited for the episodes that are going to be coming out in the next couple of weeks. The episode that came out last week, I was joined by the American Folk Art Museum's Valerie Rousseau to talk about many things, including her grandfather's, their art collection, the greatest front door in the history of front doors, as well as the self-made exhibit taking place currently at the American Folk Art Museum in New York City, which is on display now until September 13, a century of inventing artists. And speaking of self-made, a century of inventing artists, today I am pleased to be joined by one of those artists whose work is currently on display as part of the self-made exhibit. It is a piece in the collection of the American Folk Art Museum. I am joined by the one and only Bill Miller. I had a really, really fun conversation with Bill, who's embarrassingly, I was not aware of his work until earlier this year at the Outsider Art Fair in New York City, which, again, if you've never been, please go. Everybody needs to go. It's just the greatest event in the history of events. So inspiring, so incredible, so brilliant, overwhelming in the best possible ways. So great. His work was on display in New York at the Outsider Art Fair, and he has been doing some incredible things with linoleum for the past 30 years or so. We get into all of that. We talk about how he got his start in making these works with industrial materials. We talked about his upcoming shows, some of the past shows. We got into his love for music. We talked about Frank Zappa, which I was absolutely thrilled and delighted to learn about his work that he did with the Zappa family. And we just then kind of dined out and talked a little bit about music, the music he likes to play in his studio when he's making art, the music I like to play for my children that is possibly questionable, but you know what? They'll be cool one day, maybe. I don't know. Or at least I'll have a good taste in music. And then, of course, we talked about a couple of the shows that he will be going to and that I've been to and just had a really great, fun conversation with Bill. So please do enjoy that now. Hi, Bill.
Hey there, how you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing good. I want to set this up so I'm looking in the right direction. Let's see if I do this right.
Yeah, no problem.
How's that? I look like I'm looking at you and not off to the left.
Yes, it looks
That's what I hate
great.
about these things, because
I know. I would much rather prefer to do all of these in person, but
right.
with the technology we have it, I feel like I'm going to use it as best I can. I talked to somebody the other day in Spain. I've talked to somebody in London and Canada, so it's been fun because again, I would much rather get in the car or get on a plane and travel to see everybody, but
Right.
I've got two young children and I'm a teacher, so I
Yeah,
don't really
right.
have like
Sure.
a ton of a money
Yeah.
to be going everywhere to meet everybody.
Right. Well, the thing for me though, like I said, like I always find myself like looking at me or looking,
Sure.
so I like to try
Sure.
to figure that out because I don't do a lot of Zoom meetings myself. So
I unfortunately during COVID had to do a lot of them.
yeah, I did then,
So
but it's been a while,
yeah,
so
I know. I think that was a thing. And now people are like, let's forget all about Zoom and Microsoft Teams and all that. So I spoke last week with Valerie Rousseau of the Folk Art Museum. And I thought it'd be fantastic to speak to you
Sure.
since you all also take part in that exhibit. Are you joining me from your
My
studio?
studio, yeah.
Okay. And your studio is, if I did a little bit of research,
Right.
is like an old firehouse. Is that
It
correct?
is. Yeah. It's an old
Yeah.
firehouse. I got it about 4 years ago.
Can you tell me a little bit about your search into finding the perfect studio and your need for the studio? And I should say again, I'm joined by Bill Miller. People will know this as they're listening, but I'm joined by Bill
Sure.
Miller, fantastic artist, who again, I really appreciate you joining me today.
Yeah, no, it's fine. Thank you very much. I appreciate being here as well. I moved back to Pittsburgh about 12 or 13 years ago. And initially, I was working out of a big building that had a lot of artists, an old warehouse, factory kind of space. And that got taken over by developers, which, and they did a great job with it, but all the artists are gone. So I
Unfortunately,
needed to
yeah.
find a place that had a lot of space, something that could be mine or I could rent someone with someone. Really, not too expensive, not affordable. And Pittsburgh's still a place where there's a lot of, just outside the city, a lot of things that are available and empty and up there for the taking. You just kind of have to go away from the hip area,
Sure.
which was no problem for me. So I
Yeah.
did that, and I'm about 4 miles outside of the city.
Okay.
And it's very quiet. It's a nice area. And yeah, it's nice. It's got two big garage bay doors down in the basement and quite a big setup for me. I was fortunate because the person that owned this building before me was also an artist, was a silk screener. So he
Okay.
had all these, he had passed away, unfortunately, but he had all these big tables and flat files and all these things that were left on site. His
Yeah.
family didn't want them. So it, when I saw the space, I was like, well, if I'm going to do a space, this is it. Yeah.
This is it. Yeah, and we should say the reason why you need such a big space is because you work entirely with linoleum.
Right. Old linoleum floors. Yes.
All linoleum flooring. So you have just what, like piles and stacks
I
and
have
mountains
piles
of
and
linoleum?
stacks and rooms and bins. And yeah, I have a lot. I've been doing them for over 30 years. So I
Yeah.
have quite a lot. Yeah, it's a little bit of it's disorganized chaos, organized chaos, whatever
Yeah,
that term is. But
of
yeah, no, I get
course.
rolls. I can still go out and find big rolls and take them out of the houses as rolls. The stuff's brittle and old because it's been used, but that's to my benefit. And so yeah, downstairs in my garage area, there's lots of huge rolls rolled up. There's sections and pieces that have been cut down. And then there's also, I go to the hardware store and buy the plastic bins with the lids, and I just take the small remnants. So I have more than 100 of those things around. Yeah. So
Sure.
it's a dirty process. A lot of times the stuff's, it's all from early 1900s. A lot of
Yeah.
times those houses were just left alone for 30 years. So when I got it, it can be very filthy. So it can't,
Yeah.
it, I can do it at home. And when I first started to make them on a small little kitchen table, I did them at home. But as I got more advanced, they had to have their own space.
Yeah. So would you say then, like in your studio, is your, I love that again, organized chaos. Like, of course, you're an artist. It's not going to be
Right. Yeah.
super neat, but like, is your linoleum, is it organized by color? Is it organized by texture? Or is it just
No.
all over and every time you're starting a new piece, you're kind of on like a scavenger hunt?
But when it comes, yeah, so that's like that. When it comes into the studio, if it's in rolls, there's a place where the rolls are. As it gets cut down, it goes into different bins, whatever. When I do the bins, I try to color coordinate them. Though sometimes when it's cleanup day, you just kind of do it. It's kind of always the part of the process of my work is the discovery and looking for the right thing to tell the story. Because I never paint on the linoleum, I'm only looking at what I can find. What green, what blue, what other color combines to make it work is really where I spend a lot of my time. So yeah, the other day I'm working on a piece now for my upcoming show, and I went through every bin I every box I had looking for as many green pieces as I could find, because I just having the right ones are it's difficult, right? And I just want to make sure I had all of them in front of me so I could see what they were, right?
Yeah. And then what are the tools that you're using to like cut and to make
Yeah,
the shapes out of the linoleum?
it's really basic. Just utility knife, big scissors. A lot of times I'll cut the material by hand if I want something organic to happen. A lot of times the material will come to me already broken in some kind of exciting fashion. I could point to many of my pieces where that or that or that area or piece is exactly as I found it. I didn't touch it because it just has, you know, the material, especially because it has been lived on, has a real quality to it. And a lot of times, you know, it's part of the intuitive area that my work is in or whatever. That, like, I feel energies from the material quite often. I'm not like, you know, any kind of medium kind of thing like that. But every now and then I'll pick something up and I'll think, oh, something powerful happened on this floor, something memorable, or someone of note lived here, that kind of thing. Yeah. So it's really fascinating.
That is super fascinating. And, you know, I just love the fact that you're making with linoleum, because I can't point to anybody else that I know of that works like that. So in this interview series, this podcast, one thing, you know, I grew up wanting to be an artist. Didn't quite work out for me. I didn't really know what I wanted to do or what materials I wanted to use. But I like to know and ask people, sort of, what was your relationship to art like when you were growing up? I can't imagine it was always linoleum. Like, what were you drawn to as a kid?
Well, I was always an artist as a kid.
Yeah.
I kind of had just, I guess, an ability to draw. So when I was a kid in the classrooms, I could sit and draw things and people go, oh, how'd you do that? You know, it kind of came naturally to me. And my mother always said if I was misbehaving or needed me to calm down, she would just give me a piece of paper and a pencil and I would start drawing. So I've always been an artist, right? You know, it just kind of led me to want to do things. I in my chosen field, I was a graphic designer and doing publications. So while I was working in that, I kind of became like a self-taught painter in a way. I started painting and doing things like that. And then my practice grew for many reasons in different ways along that led me to linoleum, if you will.
And now, again, I was doing a little reading. Is that sort of then the start of, I was reading that you're a founding member of the Pittsburgh's Industrial Arts Co-op, which
That's
is
right.
sort of a whole group of folks working with industrialization, these materials that you found on site, these found materials. Is that after that, is that what led to that?
Yeah, that's exactly right. In the 90s, I was working with a group of artists here in Pittsburgh. And our mission was basically to go into the abandoned factories. And in those days, it was still the steel mills, which are mostly been razed by now. But we would go in basically essentially every Sunday and build a piece of art, generally meant to be probably an animal or something, with only what we found on site. So we would just whatever we could find, you know, the first piece was a big monkey. So he was built with conduit taken out of the ceilings, and we bent the conduit and then took metal and fashioned it. And it was maybe like, I don't even know, 46. It was huge. It was, you know, like 35 feet tall, whatever. Really nice. Yeah. And that was super stimulating. I mean, when you're doing that kind of stuff with a bunch of people, it really gets the creative thing going. And the other thing too about Pittsburgh at the time and a reaction that we were having and that my work has is about the loss of blue collar commerce, or blue collar, livelihood, right? Pittsburgh in the 80s, the steel mills crashed. So there's whole sections of the city that were empty factories and empty houses on the side of the hills, because Pittsburgh is very hilly. So so you would go into the abandoned factories or the abandoned homes, and it would feel like, oh, the people just didn't come home. Especially like in the mills, you know, the time clocks would be there, thermoses would be there. So it was really powerful. You know, when you realize, you know, for 30 or 40 years, this was a thriving livelihood of life.
Yeah.
Now gone and really gone. I mean, and you know, Pittsburgh's done a good, and many cities have done a good job reorganizing or recreating those spaces. But at those times, there was a lot. It was like dinosaurs everywhere, you know, that you would want to go in. So the idea of creating something or relating to that was really powerful and really exciting as an artist. And yeah, the linoleum discovery came out of those days. I was certainly scavenging with my friends, and I saw linoleum, and I was like, that looks like a piece of a painting. And I got mm-hmm. really super inspired by it. And I became obsessed, and I was obsessed. I had to find all the linoleum in the world.
From that moment. Yeah, I yeah. love that. That's so great. So a couple of things jump out to me. So these pieces, did you just leave them? Were they just like, hey, this is meant for this space?
The pieces that the co-op did? Yeah. They're left in space. They're left in place. Sometimes destroyed, usually destroyed. Yeah. That was the idea. The idea, and you know, with the idea was to tell people to go look at it. Like the first one, the monkey that I mentioned, you could only see it if you looked at a peak hole, and you had to go and find the peak hole.
Wow.
So you would tell people, and then you would go, you would drive by and see people going over to the building looking at it.
That's so cool.
But in that moment, the building was being taken down. So like one side of the building was gone. It was really fun. It was really cool.
Yeah. That's so powerful. That is, I mean, there's something to that. Like you, being able to, you know, I think, again, you grow up, and even like I teach high school art, and these kids are so precious about the things they make, which is understandable and great. But there's just something so powerful about, like you were saying, too, it's about the space. It's about the materials. It's about this bygone era. And to leave that, it's, you know, like early graffiti, right?
Yeah,
like putting them
on
trains, or
that's right.
And not meant to last forever, but in that fleeting moment. And then the people that can enjoy it is incredibly powerful.
And sometimes calling attention to something, you know, that people either not thinking about, or they pass every day and don't pay attention to.
Totally.
Right? Yeah.
So then was it from that moment where, you know, you were like, I don't need to go out and buy materials anymore. I am just scavenging for materials.
Not exactly like that, but certainly like the thing about it, like I was a painter, like I like to do paintings and acrylic and oil paintings. And I showed them in group shows and did things like that. But initially my idea for the linoleum was, like I said, to me, it looked like pieces of paintings.
Mm-hmm.
It took me about a year to get enough different patterns that I felt like I had a palette, and I literally had them in the trunk of my car for, like, I just, you know, I would just throw them in there, whatever. And then finally I took the leap of making just like one single branch tree, like almost like a Japanese motif, and people just responded totally different than they had to my paintings. I mean, people like my painting, but as soon as I started showing those to people, I just get like, oh, you know, whoa. And that was really when I was like, okay, this is a good idea. And it felt, people relate to it in ways that I'm a conduit for it because I'm doing them. Mm-hmm. But the material has a power. I believe in the linoleum. It drew me in and made me a fan of it. So, you know, I believe that it has a power and a presence of its own that brings people to the work as well as then what I do to it as well. Right. And that's become, I became such a fan of linoleum immediately. That kind of obsession and passion is something I see in people that want that, like, enjoy it when they see it. I'm always, and usually if I have a show or I'm at an exhibit, I could always hear somebody out of the corner of my ear go, they just discovered what it was. A lot of times people are like, they think it's painted metal or painted wood or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's incredible to see. You know, embarrassingly, I wasn't aware of your work. I didn't see your work until this past year at the Outsider Art Fair.
Right.
And it was just completely blown away. They look like paintings. And then to discover, you know, that it is not linoleum is truly, it's really fascascinating. You've had quite the busy year, you know. So you're at the Outsider Art Fair. I know I was just talking with you last week, and you have an exhibit coming up as well.
Right.
But I wanted to chat with you about the self-made exhibit that's currently happening at the American Folk Art Museum. And you are one of a few living artists that is a part of that. So how did that come to be for you?
Well, I think Valerie Rousseau, the curator, mm-hmm. I met her a couple of years ago at an exhibit, and I'm not sure exactly how she became aware of my work. I really don't know. Mm-hmm. But I think that she became drawn to my work and became interested in it. Like I said, I met her then, and I wasn't sure exactly how we might work together someday or be a part of something. But she reached out to my gallery in New York, and they worked together on finding a piece to curate it into the show.
Yeah.
So I was very pleased, but kind of like out of some of the machinations of how that happened.
Yeah, I believe they acquired that piece,
Yeah,
is that
that's right.
correct?
Yeah,
And that
right.
is
Yeah.
now in the permanent collection of the
Yeah.
American
Yeah,
Folk Art Museum.
that's a big thrill. It's a big thrill to be a part of the show because the show is amazing.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you. I mean, it's not a small show. It is a really
No.
powerful and incredible show. Like, has it quite sunk in or hit you yet that like you are in a show with the likes of a Bill Traylor,
No.
Clementine Hunter, or all these artists?
No, it hasn't. I mean, the whole time that, when I first heard from Valerie that in the gap, my gallery, who where it might happen was about a year ago, right? So it was kind of a long plotting kind of like, because obviously that stuff's done very differently. I wouldn't say I really wasn't even sure I would. It was like kind of hard to believe until I saw it, until I went and saw it. And yeah, the idea that I'm with some of those luminaries or classic artists, I don't think it has totally sunk in. The fact that I'm in the museum is starting to. And it was a super big thrill. And when, at the exhibit, I'm proud to say I think my piece looks very nice within it, But yeah, the stuff that's there is amazing. And Joe Coleman, the artist, Joe Coleman's
Oh,
got
yeah.
a few pieces in it, and he was there, one of the few living people too. Yeah, it was really something. Yeah. I
It's
can't really
great.
say. I appreciate it. Yeah.
Yeah, of course. I mean, again, you've had a very illustrious career and you've done a lot of amazing things and a couple that I want to specifically talk about here in a moment.
Right.
But to be in that show, and I mean, if you go to the website right now, the Folk Art Museum website, it's your
I
work
know.
is the front piece. It's
I
there,
know.
right? It's drawing people in. So
Yeah, it's
it's
cool.
really cool. I am gonna do my best to try to get out to that show. I think it, b believe it's going until September
Yeah.
13th, I want to say.
Right.
I was talking to Valerie a week or two ago. I said I was going to try to get out there if the Knicks won for the parade and the show. I missed the boat on that. I had a
Well,
big
they
coach
did it
pitch
too
game that I had
quickly.
to get to. I know, right? If they would have waited like another week or two, made it more
Right.
interesting,
Yeah, I
but
know, right.
That's incredible. The self-made exhibit again. If you haven't had a chance, people, you should go check that out. See Bill's work in person because again, it is just incredible to see. Could you tell me a little bit about the piece that is currently behind you? Again, everybody in this Zoom era has these really cool, fancy backgrounds that we use,
Right.
but like
Yeah.
yours is a piece of your work,
Right.
which is beautiful, just
Thanks.
looking at it from here.
Yeah, I'm working on this for my show in September. I'm having a show at Diaphragma Gallery in New York, and that
Perfect.
opens September 17th. So
Great.
I'm in the throes of finishing the pieces. I'm delivering them in the middle of August, so I'm finishing. So this is about 60 inches wide by 40 inches tall, and it's basically just like the kind of the pastoral landscape that you can see, right? Based a little bit on some drawings, and also based on some I'm a big fan of Egon Schiele and Gustav Klimt and Gabriel Munter. I like to look at those people's I flip through books and I make sketches in my book and I just kind of interpret things, and I could say that some of those landscapes inform this one for sure. It's not quite done, but it's getting there.
I've now that you say that, I can totally see that in some of your works. Again, especially the one that is at the Folk Art Museum currently. It does feel very Gustav Klimt, we should say the piece that you made that is at the Folk Art Museum is called Metropolitan Park, which you made almost 20 years ago
Right.
now, but it is a really beautiful depiction of a child, maybe
Right.
you.
It's me, right.
It
Well,
is you.
self-made
It's
is self
right,
portrait,
self-portrait. So it
right?
so it's really, really cool. I can definitely see that inspiration. It's beautiful.
Yeah, thanks. It's based on a photo of me that was taken when I was two. So, like a family portrait. And I made, again, one of the things about the material is the material asks me to also talk about my history and that kind of stuff and common memory for all of us. Like I have done political things too, but definitely sometimes I'll see a family photo or an old photo and think, oh, I wanna, I a lot of times I'll see things like, oh, I can do that linoleum. I can see how that could happen. And that could be exciting for me. Yeah.
So when you have those thoughts, those visions, those inspirations, are you immediately heading to your studio to go pick out the pieces?
As soon as I can, I'm certainly at least talking into my phone or making notes immediately. There's quite a few times that I'll be thinking of something and think, okay, I got to do that in terms of what color combinations or things like that. So go to my studio right away if I can. Yeah, if at all possible, for sure. Yeah.
That's awesome. You know, I guess I had another question just sort of about working with linoleum, going back a little bit. You know, again, teaching high school art, I've got two young boys who make art, love to make art. And I think I'm very lucky that I am in this world of self-taught artists or outsider artists, artists that work with different materials or different subject matter. But I wonder, you know, you obviously had a really great group collaboration of people in the co-op that you were a part of. But at first, when you started working with linoleum, was there any negative reviews or people that weren't so like keen on what you were doing because it wasn't painting or it wasn't a traditional sculpture?
I think you're always going to have detractors for anything, you know. Not certainly anything that was cumbersome or that would cause me to pause about what I was doing. I think a lot of times, to be honest, it's usually other creative people that are like, "Well, you know, how'd you come up with that?" You know, I have had my work on a wall in a gallery and had someone come in and go, "Oh, I could do that," you know, and you're like, "Okay." I
Then go
mean,
do it.
yes, go find it and then do it, right? But I think that's a natural reaction to something. You know, people have those kind of things. I think what I concentrate on the fact that people like them and they enjoy them and I get good response. So, like, I'm really fortunate that I can feel that confident about them, right? You know, if I'm going to do a show and I'm going to hang 20 or 30 pieces, for the most part, I'm going to get people are going to like them, right? I feel good. There's always going to be people that don't like something or will say something negative, or obviously, you know, it could be thought of as something that could be, you know, exploitive or gimmicky, I guess. I think that's part of it. But I think what I do with the material and what my finished pieces look like kind of will go past that, you know. But yeah, but I have to
Totally.
just be confident in that and not let it get me down. Because yeah, you're always going to hear positives and negatives, and oftentimes all the different things in between. So you just have to do what you do and feel good about it.
Yeah, totally. I think, you know, it's just hard for my high school students sometimes when they are doing or I suggest, hey, let's work with this material. And they're like, that's not like,
Right.
I feel like, especially growing up in Iowa, you know, it's just like, it needs to look like this or it has to go like that.
Right.
And it's hard for some of these students to get out of that
Right.
mindset where, no, it can be different and it might be hard at
Right.
first. But once you push through that and just if you are making things that you like, that you believe in, like,
Right.
that's all that
One
matters.
thing that I can add to that is, as a painter, I had a lot of frustration trying to make a painting as good as I wanted because you know, it's difficult, very difficult to do. Finding the right colors, finding the right things. And when I started to work with the linoleum, it liberated me from all that because I can't change the red. I can't change it. It's just going to be whatever. And so it actually opened my mind to the fact that, hey, this is accept it and make it and finish its art. Don't get caught up on, oh, you know, I mean, certainly my practice, the constraints are, I don't have this blue anymore. I don't have this green anymore. And there's many pieces I've made subsequently that, oh, if I would have still had more of that, but I don't. So I have to improvise. But I do think, you know, as a young person or a young artist, you just have to push through. You have to just make something. And that's one thing that's great about the community of self-taught folk art, outsider art, is it kind of accepts art creation and with the intent that the artist brings to it, that there's value to that. So it gives a place for you to have those feelings like, hey, it might not be a perfectly painted, you know, thing, but it's a piece of art. Yeah.
I know, and that's what, you know, back to the Outsider Art Fair, which you were at earlier this year, your work. Were you there? I guess
I was there.
unfortunately,
Yeah.
okay. I was in my booth. I didn't get a chance to see and meet everybody I would have loved to. I
Right.
would love to chat. But I just think anybody, any artist just should go, or anybody in general should go because it's such an
Right.
inspiring place, which is so much different, beautiful artwork that
It right.
it is
Yeah, the
fantastic.
unexpected discovery is what you get. That's what people get with what when they discover my work, it's unexpected. They would never have imagined it. And that's what I think you find a lot there.
Yeah.
Just by virtue of what it's made, how it's made, who made it, all those kinds of things. It's like, oh, that's what I love about that genre, or being there. It's like, oh, it happens every time you turn the corner.
Yeah. Oh yeah. And you
Yeah.
have to turn the corner at least 100 times because there's so much to see. Speaking of unexpected, here's a nice little segue.
Okay.
I was doing a little reading about you, and one thing that I didn't totally expect, but I was excited to read about, is that you've made your this is Howard Finster-esque, making cover art for artists, for musicians. You've made two covers for Frank Zappa.
Right.
How
Well,
did
Frank
that come to be?
Zappa's his posthumously.
Posthumously,
Yeah,
yes,
right, yeah,
correct. Sorry.
right.
How did that come to be?
Well, that's a pretty fun story. I was having a show in Los Angeles in 2008, so this goes back a little ways. And I am a music and rock and roll music and music in general is a big influence on my work, like totally, whether it be
Okay.
song titles, listening to music, always.
Yeah.
And Frank Zappa also, as I mean, I would date myself, but when I was in high school, Frank Zappa was one of the big
Yeah.
artists of the day, right?
Yeah,
So I
yeah, yeah.
saw him in concert and whatever, but he's a really important
Mother of
artist.
inventions, right?
Exactly, right.
Come
He was a really
on.
important artist to me, right,
Yeah, of
at the time.
course.
And then around 2007, I think his son started to tour his music again, so it kind of got back in the on the radio and things. So I started to get into it again, and after a few months of listening to it, I started to do a portrait of Zappa, and then I realized I'm
Oh.
having a show in Los Angeles. That's where he's from, or
Yeah.
where he's known for being from.
Right.
So I want to do a portrait for the show, and literally a friend of mine, I was showing this friend my show, online before I went out to L.A., and she said, "Oh, Frank Zappa, my friend is their lawyer." So it was really
Wow.
a coincidence
Yeah.
that Gail Zappa, who was his widow and still alive at the time, saw my piece and contacted the gallery. And so she contacted the gallery to buy the piece. And then she called the opening and I spoke to her. And then after a few minutes of conversation, she realized how big of a fan I was. Because it was the kind of thing where you like, what's your favorite album? The kind of conversations you almost play in your head if you were ever to.
Yeah.
And
Yeah.
so I was talking to her and she said, oh, you've got to come to the house. You've got to come to the house. So then the next day, a friend of mine and I went to the Zappa house, where
Wow.
it was still like not, the house is gone now. She's passed away, but it was still his studio, where he lived. His studio was still intact. His office was still intact. So
Wow.
it was a big thrill. And
Yeah.
it was great. We got to meet and be friendly. And she said, let's stay in touch. And I did just that. The first one that I did was the congressional testimony, like he had
Right.
done it. And so, like, I specifically asked about that and I did the piece. And then about 6 months later, the CD came out. Yeah.
That's really great. And
Yeah,
so, and
it
you,
was great.
sorry, I was just gonna say, and you did too, right? So
I
it
did
was,
too. The second one was called Finer Moments.
okay.
And the interesting thing about that release was it was a double album thing that he had prepared while he was still alive, but never released. Because if you, one thing that you know about Frank Zappa is there's a vault underneath the house. There was everything he ever did was recorded, every concert, everything. And it was
Yeah.
just racks and racks of tape. So the guy that was their Vaultmeister would go in and find junk nuggets and things, and then they would bring them out and release them. And this was one of those. So it was great because it was something he had put together,
Yeah.
but had never been out. So it was a big thrill.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's really cool. That's
And
incredible.
yeah, right. So, yeah, no, it was
Yeah.
really great. Yeah.
Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off if you
Oh,
had
that's
something
okay.
else to
Yeah.
add. I'm just turning into like a fanboy. I don't, I'm a huge fan of Frank Zappa. The documentary that came out about him a couple of years ago, I don't know if you saw
Right.
that,
Yeah,
which
yeah,
is
yeah.
talk about
I've
again,
seen.
incredible artists like his. I mean, almost to the point of maybe too intense, but like just
Right.
the rehearsals that the Mother's Invention that they would do before
Right.
shows, it's something.
Well, when I talked to Gail, when I met her, one of the things I said was if there's a movie that he made called Baby Snakes, which
Okay.
is a concert film combined with stop animation by
Yeah.
Bruce Bickford. And if you look this up, Bruce Bickford and that stop animation is a big influence on me as a kid. I mean, it was real. It's really amazing work, and they did some beautiful stuff. And I told Gail that what I learned from watching that movie was how Frank worked all the time. And that's one thing I'll say as an artist is you have to do it as much as possible. You know, what I do, my work takes so many months and so long. But that's one thing that I learned from that watching that is like you're always working.
Yeah.
You've always, always, always got to work. So it's not going to come from late. You know, Salvador Dali's quote is no masterpiece was made by a lazy artist.
Yeah.
So, you know,
yeah,
that is true.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, that's really great. Yeah, I've been trying to show my children. I used to play them a couple of songs from A Mother's Invention album, Freak Out, maybe
right.
before they learned a few what those words actually meant and could say. So
who are the brain police?
Yeah. Now that they're a little bit older, I forget the one song. It was probably not appropriate, but now that they can repeat those words and shouldn't repeat them, we've stopped playing that a little bit.
No, but it's great that you know the album Freak Out.
Yeah, I should have gotten my Frank Zappa studio his label.
Yeah,
I had a
sure.
shirt for a while, Frank Zappa. Right. But anyways, I digress. But the stop motion, I've also been trying to show my children as much stop motion as possible.
Right.
And my son has done a little bit here and there. I just think it's just so fun. I did one in photography class this year for my students.
Right.
It's such an incredible, powerful, I just don't know what better way to describe it, but it's such a creative outlet just to be as free and as expressive as you can be. So there's something to that stop motion.
Yeah, I tried to do one with my stuff once a few years ago, and it would be great to do. It's just too time consuming, and it's not the objective of what I'm doing. But it's pretty great, pretty fun.
That is the only hard part, especially with high school students. This takes forever.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Well, listen to Bill Miller. Hard work, good art takes hard work.
Right.
Okay. So, I want to respect your time. And again, I know you got a lot to get to for your latest
sure.
exhibit. But so speaking of music, then what would be an album that you're playing later today if you were to go to work, or what's been in the studio? What have you been playing lately?
Well, it's funny that you mentioned Freak Out because the other night I was in my studio when I listened to Freak Out, the first three Zap albums all in a row. So I listened to all of Freak Out just the other night.
Yeah.
So
I love it.
Right now I've been, I do a lot of like playlists and things like that.
Okay.
I've been listening to this band called the Television Personalities from England from like the '80s. I think they're like punk,
okay.
like, you know, kind of early, what they kind of, maybe inspired Belle and Sebastian, if you know Belle and Sebastian.
I don't. I'm trying to become like a music guy. It just wasn't. It wasn't really my thing.
Right.
Growing up.
Well,
you know,
Freak Out. So you.
I know Freak Out.
Well.
I do know
but,
that. Yeah.
Yeah. No. I listen to a lot of Brian Eno in the studio because Eno is so hypnotic and you know, so I listen to a lot of that and. You know, I make playlists. That's probably my big downfall. But
I think that's the way to go. I try to, you know, listen to like a full album here and there. Sometimes you can really get a good one. But that Eno album, I believe it's called Outsider or something that Eno did with David Bowie, after they went to, and I'm blank, Gallery Guggen in Austria to visit the Outsider Art artists there.
Right.
You know, so that's a really cool one. I actually reached out to Eno once on Instagram and be like, hey man, you want to come on my podcast? I never heard from him, but
well, I try again.
I might try again. You're right. I might try again.
Yeah. But yeah, you know, I listen to music pretty much nonstop in the studio. Yeah, for sure. I listen to I don't know. I listen to a lot of 70s stuff because that's the era, but you know,
That's the best stuff though. You know, I mean, I've been playing that for my kids, 70s, 80s. Yeah.
I listened to the Beatles White Album from beginning to end the other night, put it on and just listen to the whole thing.
Can't go
wrong. To me, that's a piece of art. It's like a piece of cinema or literature almost.
Totally.
Like a lot of times people would say maybe my generation didn't read as much, but we listened a lot. Like a lot of times I would say novels for me are albums.
Totally,
you know,
100%. I mean, again, a Frank Zappa album is a piece of like
exactly.
Russian literature. I mean,
especially those first three, because he was really trying to say so much about society, and it was the late 60s.
Yeah.
So he really kind of almost like was on a mission to say some things, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, so then did you get to go to a lot of concerts?
Yeah,
is there one or two that you can remember that?
Oh, I've been to too many. I'm a real fan of Patti Smith.
Yeah,
So I've
of
seen Patti
course.
Smith a lot of time, many
Oh,
times.
fantastic.
I'm a big fan of Guided by Voices, the
Okay.
band. I've seen them a bunch. I'm a big fan of Wilco.
Yeah.
You know Wilco? Yeah. In
Yeah.
fact, I'm going to go up to their music festival this weekend up in North Adams. It's my only time off between now and my show. So
Fantastic.
I'm going to take the weekend to do that. So yeah, I
Well,
still go to
and
shows quite a bit. I was lucky. I'm old enough to have seen Paul McCartney and Wings
I
back in the day.
yeah, you know
So.
what? I was lucky enough to take my dad to go see Paul McCartney about a year ago, well, 9 months ago or so now, here in Des Moines. And it was a dream. It was
It was a great,
fantastic.
I saw it also here, and it was a good show. I mean,
I don't know how that guy does it. He's like 84 years old and he's playing
right?
like a 3 hour concert.
Yeah, no, I'm going to go see
It's
Bob Dylan in a couple of weeks, and he's 85, so.
amazing. Amazing. Well, and then too, you know, I think you're probably about my dad's age, but he always tells me about the ticket prices back when he was going to concerts,
Right,
you
yeah,
know, and how
$7, $6.
the one that he will never forget, he always kicks himself about. I believe he was going to see, you know, like I'm blanking on some of their names, the Doobie Brothers and a couple of these for like he would pay like $5.
Right.
And then I think at the concert venue that he would always go to, the Stones were coming and they raised it to like $15. And him and his buddies were like, "No way, I'm not paying $15 to go see the Stones." And he is like completely kicking himself now and regretting that
That's pretty funny.
decision.
Yeah,
I wish
no,
I could
true.
have paid $15 to go see Paul McCartney a couple weeks ago,
Yeah,
but
no, that was a little bit more. Yeah,
yeah,
just a
yeah.
little.
Yeah, I went to go see him and now he won't stop texting me. He just nonstop. He's
I get
like,
texts from him the other day too. Happy birthday, Paul.
yeah, he's like, "Happy birthday to me." I'm like, "Can't somebody wish Paul McCartney a birthday? Happy
He's got a
birthday?" Like,
good
why?
PR team. He
He
really
sure
does.
does. He sure does. He sure does. Well, enjoy the Bob Dylan, enjoy
Yeah,
the
sure.
Wilco. I'm very excited for you.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah.
I want to say one thing before we finish.
Sure.
I am always looking for old linoleum. So
Okay.
if your listeners, readers, viewers, know of any
Deal.
old linoleum, real linoleum is 1900 to 1950. Cork tar and linseed oil underneath. It's never glued down. It just rolls right up. Anywhere around America, I'll ship it. I'll come get it. Whatever. I'm going to pick. In fact, one of the reasons I'm going to Massachusetts this weekend is to get a roll that I've
Amazing.
already gotten. But yeah, so please, linoleum, billmillerart.com. Please help me find it. I
Let's
need
get Bill Miller your
it.
linoleum.
All
Yes,
the
let's do
linoleum
it. And
that
then
you
you'll
can
see
find.
it in an art piece
That's
at a
exactly right.
museum or the outside of art fair in a couple of years.
I just
So.
went to the Catskills a couple months ago and got some. I saw somebody posting that they were renovating their house, and I contacted them and went and got their linoleum.
That's
So
so great.
I'm on the search for it for sure.
Okay, that's fantastic. I will I might need to buy an old house just to
I know, but
and then drive it
you know,
out to come see you to your
any
studio.
yeah, anywhere you are though, like here I'm in Western Pennsylvania, between here and Middle Ohio, there's tons of towns where there's those still houses where this material can be found.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if Bill Miller shows up at your door and knocks around your front door looking for you, linoleum,
He
don't be
just wants the
alarmed.
floors.
He
Yeah.
just wants the floor. So fantastic. Bill, thank you again so much for joining me. People should go again to the American Folk Art Museum, check out the self-made exhibit. And then in September, you've got an exhibit at Die
Die
Firma.
Firma. Yeah.
So
September 17th is the
go
opening.
check that out. And then
Great.
again, if you've got old linoleum, get it to Bill Miller. Bill Miller
Great.
Art. We'll put a link in the description so everybody can get
Sure.
that for
All
you.
right. Thanks. I that wasn't too much of a plug, but I figured,
No, I love it. I love it. I had an artist, one of my good buddies, Montrell Beverly, who's a pipe cleaner artist.
Right.
I was like, "Hey,
Absolutely.
let's get, I don't know how much power I have with this thing, but if I can help artists get
Anything at all.
materials, let's do it." I think
Great.
that'd be using my powers for good. So,
Great. Thanks a lot, Adam.
of course. Thank
All
you,
right.
Bill.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
And thank you. Thank you to Bill Miller for joining me here today. Thank you to everybody for listening, for liking, subscribing, leaving reviews. I do appreciate it. I have a lot more fun and great conversations coming in the next few weeks. It is Art Environment Summer, so stay tuned for that. I've got some great conversations with the people in the art environment space. Remember, if you are traveling anywhere, go check out an art environment. But again, I want to thank Bill Miller for joining me. He had a show that he's working on currently, and that he had some things that he had to get done. So just being flexible, I appreciate that from him. So thank you to Bill again. Go see the Self-Made exhibit in New York City, opening September 17th at Diaphragma. You've got another chance to see Bill Miller's work. And please, as you heard him, he's not kidding. We talked about it again after the episode. We got done recording. If you have linoleum, 1900s to 1950s, Bill Miller wants your linoleum. I think that needs to be a website. I should probably buy it. I should probably send people to that link. Might just need to do it. Please, if you have it, he will come get it. He will ship it. He works strictly with linoleum, and he needs as much as he can get. So if you have linoleum and you want it to, again, possibly be in a Bill Miller art piece, he will take it off of your hands. You can reach out to him on Instagram at Bill Miller Art. You can go to his website, BillMillerArt.com. Please get Bill Miller your linoleum. And thank you again for joining me. Please stay tuned. Please have a great summer. Please be safe. Please be kind. And we will talk to you soon. Peace. And thank you to Jason Brown for the Folk Artwork and Friends theme song and all the interstitials. So many great little ditties that he put together for me. I can't thank him enough. Go check out more original music from Jason at sapwood.bandcamp.com. Buy an album. Support folk musicians like Jason. Thank you again, friend. Can't thank you enough. You are the best.